Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Midland Times. Midland Humane Coalition cuts ribbon to new Joe and Van Maybe Animal Rescue Center. By Midland Times, August 19, 2024. The Midland Humane Coalition, MHC, celebrated the grand opening of its new animal rescue center on August 17, bearing the names of Joe and Van Maybe. The facility is intended to help MHC operate and look out for the community. According to MHC, a video of the ribbon-cutting ceremony was shared on its Facebook page. It expressed how happy it was for the Joe and Van Maybe Animal Rescue Center, as well as thanked everyone who supports our mission. Permian Basin, NBC, KWES News reported that the doors to the building were barely open when visitors were already entering to seek animals under MHC's care to adopt. MHC Executive Director E.J. Terrazas told KWES that the center was a culmination of what he described as a 60-month journey for MHC to look for a new place. Terrazas added that his organization now has 120 kennels and a dedicated isolation unit, which it didn't have before when it took up residency at a local PetSmart. According to Permian Basin CBS affiliate KOSA News, the Joe and Van Maybe Animal Rescue Center is located along Highway 80 eastbound between Midland and Odessa. Domino's donates proceeds to SPED program in honor of local child. Have a heart day, Thursday, August 22, 2024. By Kim Delapina, Domino's Pizza in Andrews, Texas, will be donating a portion of daily proceeds to Clear Fork Elementary School's SPED program in memory of Vincent Hill. The donation will come from sales between 10 a.m. and 1 a.m. on August 22nd at the 1335 North Main Street location in Andrews. Vincent, a 6-year-old nonverbal and autistic child, passed away on August 14th in a hit-and-run accident in Andrews. Vincent's mom described him as an adventurous boy who loved cherry dum-dum lollipops, corn dogs, but only from the blue box, soft materials, and his trampoline. Christy Flournoy, local marketing director and event coordinator for Domino's Pizza, said Vincent was a happy, active little boy. Domino's Pizza invites everyone from the community and surrounding areas to give back to the special education program in Andrews, she said. Vincent's family and Domino's West Texas franchise, owned by Cassie Garrity of Midland, organized the fundraiser. Garrity expressed the franchise commitment to supporting West Texas families, saying, "We are honored to help in any way we can. West Texas is our home. No matter what, we want to help, be present, and lend true assistance to our West Texas family," Flournoy said. This is Christy, and I'll be reading Permian Proud. Pecos community mourns passing of legendary swim coach Terry Morse, August 20th, 2024, by staff report. The Pecos community and beyond is honoring the life and legacy of beloved swim coach and mentor, Terry Morse, who recently died after more than 3 decades of shaping the lives of countless local swimmers. Morse was born in Midland in 1956, grew up in Kermit, and began swimming at age 7. She would later win the gold medal in the breaststroke as part of the Bel Air High School Houston State Championship swim team before shining at Stephen F. Austin University as both a swimmer and a coach. After moving to Pecos in 1985, Morse became the legendary coach of the Pecos High School swim team, which under her guidance racked up 41 district titles, 17 regional championships, 6 regional runner-ups, 6 4A state championships, and 3 UIL state top 5 finishes. She earned the prestigious Theron Pickle Outstanding Swim Coach Award in 2006 and the NFHS State Coach of the Year Award and National Section Swim Coach of the Year Award in 2011. Terry Morse's passion for coaching and her deep love for her swimmers were evident in every aspect of her career, said Daniel Alvarado, Reeves County Director of Digital Media, in a media statement. She often reflected on her journey with the sentiment, "I got to live my dream." Her legacy is defined by a life of service, teaching, and unwavering support for the generations of swimmers she cherished. Morse is survived by her brother, Mike Morse of Houston, her dear friend and assistant coach, Joan Capshaw, as well as hundreds of swimmers who she considered family, and her beloved pets, including her spaniel, Ellie, and rescued cats, Smokey, Patches, and Banana. A memorial was held August 17th at the First Methodist Church, followed by a remembrance at the Reeves County Civic Center. In lieu of flowers, contributions are being made to an award founded in Coach Morse's name at West Tex Community Credit Union or to the Pecos Animal Shelter, reflecting her enduring commitment to both her animals and her athletes.
Geothermal project slated for South Texas. A South Texas coal mine and coal-fired power plant will host a new geothermal energy storage facility as part of a local electric utilities energy transition. Sage Geosystems, a Houston-based startup founded by former executives from Shell, first announced plans to build a 3-megawatt geothermal energy storage facility capable of providing enough electricity to power 750 Texas homes on the hottest summer days in February. The company said Tuesday that the project would be built in Christine, about an hour south of San Antonio. Sage has leased 10 acres for the facility from San Miguel Electric Cooperative, a utility that powers up to 78,200 South Texas homes. Sage CEO Cindy Taft said, "The geothermal project will be on the same site as San Miguel's coal mine and coal-fired power plant. The project could be the first geothermal facility in Texas, and comes as the state's grid faces twin pressures from unprecedented power demand growth and extreme weather. Grid experts say energy storage systems can help stabilize the grid by providing electricity when it's most needed, and by storing excess renewable energy for use when the sun isn't shining and the wind isn't blowing." San Miguel CEO Craig Corder said the utility began to take an interest in geothermal energy and in Sage Geosystems in particular, as it grappled with how to provide cleaner yet still affordable and reliable electricity to its customers in rural South Texas. San Miguel has faced lawsuits from local ranchers over water and soil pollution from the Christine mine. The coal-fired power plant and lignite coal mine are supposed to close in 2037. That end date could come sooner if cheap solar and wind power make it uneconomic to produce coal-fired power, or if federal regulations aiming to limit climate warming emissions from coal-fired power plants are enacted, Corder said. Quote, "We have to be ready at any time between now and 2037 and have a game plan for how we are going to continue producing this power, and it doesn't happen overnight," end quote, he said. Sage aims to complete construction of the Christine facility by December, though when the project will be operational depends on when the company's application to connect to the grid operated by the Electric Reliability Council of Texas is processed, Taft said. The project is estimated to cost $14 million, including the cost for the ERCOT application and for research and development, she said. Geothermal technology leverages heat beneath the Earth's surface for energy production. Though the technology has been around for decades, it is seeing a resurgence of enthusiasm, including from the Department of Energy, because fracking technologies developed from the oil and gas industry have made this clean energy resource more cost-effective and broadly available than before. No geothermal resources currently provide generation to the ERCOT grid, spokesperson Trudy Webster said. In 2025, Sage Geosystems hopes to be the first. Its geothermal energy storage facility would be able to store electricity for up to 10 hours, Taft said. The energy storage resource most abundant on the ERCOT grid now is lithium-ion battery storage, which can store electricity for up to 4 hours and has faced pushback from Houston area communities afraid of potential fires and explosions. Quote, "The need for longer and longer duration storage is coming, and our storage can deliver that," end quote, Taft said. Sage Geosystems technology works by drilling a well and an accompanying reservoir offshoot, she said. The facility will use subsurface heat to increase the round-trip efficiency of moving water into and out of underground fractures to generate electricity. But the heat itself won't be converted into electricity, she said. Instead, when demand for electricity is low, and thus electricity prices are low, the facility will take electricity from the ERCOT grid to pump water into the underground fracture, inflating it like a balloon. When the demand for and cost of electricity spikes, valves will open and pressure will shoot water back up the well, spinning turbines that generate electricity, Taft said. SAGE chose to locate its, quote, first of its kind, end quote, project within the ERCOT grid, not only because the company could get permits to build quicker in Texas, but also because the ERCOT market has volatile electricity prices, which suits the energy storage business model, Taft said. The company is exploring installing solar panels to generate the electricity to be stored in its geothermal facility, Taft said. The company is also looking at putting a Bitcoin mining trailer by the geothermal facility to simulate the needs of a data center, as Taft aspires for Sage Geosystems to eventually provide off-grid electricity to data centers. Assuming the net cost of electricity generated from solar panels is 2 cents per kilowatt hour, electricity from Sage Geosystems' geothermal energy storage facility paired with solar would cost 5 cents per kilowatt hour for a full day of energy production, Taft said. San Miguel is also looking at reusing some of the 12,000 acres of land it owns and now uses for coal mining to host solar farms, Quarter said. Study: More well blowouts to come. Blackwater erupted from another West Texas oil well last week, in the same area as one that flowed toxic water for weeks and inspired a controversial no-fly zone in December, worsening the recent rash of foul water blowouts affecting the area. The most recent blowout outside Grand Falls in Pecos County also follows one on a neighboring ranch in June, which was roughly 14 miles from the, quote, unusual, end quote, Crane County well that raised eyebrows earlier this year, and about 5 miles from the so-called Lake Bomer, the infamous ever-growing 60-acre body of poison water spewing from an old wildcat well. A recent study from Southern Methodist University found these were not isolated incidents. Researchers linked the blowouts with the practice of injecting oil field wastewater underground. The study suggests wastewater leaked from its containers into subsurface pathways, accumulating into an underground aquifer that is putting pressure on aging wells. As pressure mounts, quote, several more such blowouts are possible in the near future, end quote. The study, which launched in January 2023 after the first big Crane County blowout in 2022, said, quote, the pressure is increasing because there is more and more water accumulating, end quote. Vamshi Karanam, an SMU researcher who authored the study, said in an interview last month. The need for further study of the underground pathways contributing to these blowouts is, quote, urgent, end quote, he said. The recent outbreak of toxic salt water from old wells is also near Antina Ranch, the 22,000-acre property that has become a poster child for the issue of old wells springing back to life. The crew assembled to address the issue at Antina calls them, quote, zombie wells, end quote. The most recent blowout on Laura Briggs Ranch began August 1st, said Hawk Dunlap, a well control specialist who works at Antina. Dunlap, who said he was called to help address the issue, estimated water was flowing from the orphaned oil well at about 20 gallons a minute. Briggs said Thursday during an interview that the same contractor, Holman Well Service, plugged another orphaned well on her property last year that has already begun to leak. She said she fears improperly plugged wells on the property could lead to the formation of sinkholes. Quote, what's unfortunate is this one's very close to my house, end quote, Briggs said, estimating that the new blowout is roughly 350 yards from her home. Holman did not immediately reply to a request for comment. Sarah Stogner, an oil and gas attorney with Antina and a vocal critic of the state's oil and gas regulators, said she requested a temporary restraining order Wednesday that would prohibit state contractors from continuing to, quote, improperly plug, end quote, the well. Quote, it's putting a Band-Aid on a severed artery, end quote, said Dunlap, who is also a Libertarian candidate for the seat held by Chairman Christy Craddock on the Railroad Commission of Texas, which regulates the state oil and gas industry. A spokeswoman for the RRC said in a statement the agency began working at Briggs' property last week, using vacuum trucks and lined pits to manage the uncontrolled flow of water. Quote, this week is a rig is also being used to work on controlling the well and water flow, And we will continue to do that work because the RRC's critical mission, which we diligently adhere to, is protecting the environment and public safety," end quote, she said. Community. Keys for Hope, Shoot, and Soiree draws dancers and diners. A deep purple hue glistened in the air at the Petroleum Club of Midland during the fourth annual Keys for Hope, Shoot, and Soiree fundraiser that benefits Gifts of Hope. As guests headed up to the ballroom, purple luminaries lined both sides of the stairwell. Once halfway up, oversized letters spelling out Keys for Hope illuminated in purple from across the club. The silent auction was underway as soon as partygoers got a glimpse of the items, which included a two-night trip to Luckenbach, a dinner at Michael's, and a Midland Community Theater show, a cooking class from HEB, a family night out at the Rockhounds, and a night at the Settles Hotel. While viewing and bidding, attendees enjoyed cocktails and appetizers such as beef taquitos pre-dipped in guacamole, served out of a cocktail glass. Guests took their seats to a plated Southwest salad with black beans and corn on butter lettuce. After a prayer by the Gifts of Hope Executive Director, Clint Dixon, guests dined on chili-rubbed pork tenderloin with maple bourbon glaze, hatch chili au gratin potatoes, Southwest green beans, and jalapeno cornbread. Blueberry cheesecake was already on the table for dessert. Christy Gessel, the organization's associate director, talked about its mission and purpose, reminding the group how their money they so generously donated for the evening's event impacts those who utilize Hope House, the actual home Gifts of Hope operates and where the cancer patients stay while getting treatment in Midland. After dinner, guests danced to a live DJ and enjoyed late-night ice cream and churros with caramel and chocolate sauces. High school seniors show off art skills on parking spots. Seniors for the class of 2025 kept the tradition alive and were out in full force to customize their school parking spot for their final year of high school. Along with family and friends, students at Midland High could be seen taping and outlining their personal design, then painting it in shifts as it dried. Parking spot themes range from designs that highlighted their favorite movies, comic books, and television shows to the university they hope to attend or their favorite vacation spot. Mainly Midland. Clay Shoot Fundraiser, Permian Basin Fair and Expo, Robbins Children's Health Fair. Odessa YMCA hosts Pulling for Our Cause Clay Shoot Fundraiser. The Odessa YMCA has announced its second annual Clay Shoot Fundraiser for August 30th at Jake's Clay's at 13301 Farm to Market Road 1379 in Midland. The fundraiser will include a clay shooting competition where competitors can test their aim and skill across various shooting stations. Prizes and awards will be given to individuals and teams. Breakfast and lunch will be served during the event. All the proceeds from the event will benefit the Odessa Family YMCA's annual campaign, which provides financial assistance for Y memberships, learning centers, and sports programs. Sponsorship opportunities are available. To sign up or register for your team, visit tinyurl.com/3T989TWT or the YMCA Central Welcome Desk. Permian Basin Fair and Expo. The Permian Basin Fair and Expo is scheduled from August 30th to September 8th at the Ector County Coliseum. The fair offers family entertainment, live music, shopping, and food vendors and livestock shows. For the past 48 years, the fair has been providing entertainment and being a community partner for residents and businesses of the Permian Basin. Since 1975, the fair has awarded over $1 million in scholarships through its scholarship program. This year, several budget-friendly nights are being offered to guests for a reduced cost. A new feature this year includes the Off-Axis Stunt Show, which will bring the thrill-seeking action. A returning crowd favorite is the Paul Bunyan Lumberjack Show and the Wild West Show, a long-standing tradition that will be part of the daily entertainment. Garden tractor pulls and the petting zoo are included with ticket prices. 17 musical artists will take the stage during the fair's run. Johnny Blaine, Corn-Fed Cadillac, Chris DeAnda, and Sabor E. Ritmo will be bringing their talents. Peyton Howie will also perform this year. Howie was nominated Texas Regional Radio's New Female Vocalist of the Year and 2023 Texas Country Music Awards Emerging Artist of the Year. Contests include the talent show Junior and Little Mr. and Miss Pageants, Creative Arts, 4-H, Archery Shoot, 7 Livestock Shows, a Ranch Rodeo, a Dog Extravaganza, Cattle Dog Trials, and more. The fair will host a qualifier on Saturday, September 7th for the Mutton Bustin' for the 2025 Sandhill Stock Show and Rodeo. Sensory night will occur on 5 to 8 p.m. September 4th. During these hours, the music will be lowered and the night lights dimmed so those with special needs can enjoy the fair. For more information on tickets or the full schedule, visit pbfair.com. Robbins Children Health Fair. The Bush Family Home State Historic Site is hosting the first annual Children's Health Fair in honor of Robin Bush, George H.W. and Barbara Bush's daughter, who died of leukemia in 1953 while they lived in the home on West Ohio Street. September is Children's Cancer Awareness Month, and the historic site wanted to use the occasion to allow families to get information during a fun event. The health fair will be from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. September 14th at the Bush Family Home State Historic Site, 1412 West Ohio Street in Midland. Health booths will be featured under an air-conditioned tent that will highlight clinics and doctors from around the Midland and Odessa areas. Also, children can learn about their health by bringing a doll or teddy bear and learn what a doctor might do at a checkup doctor's visit. Scooter dog food truck will be available for food purchases. Self-guided tours of the Bush home will also take place. Robin Bush was born in Compton, California on December 20, 1949. Named after Barbara Bush's mother, who had recently died in a car accident, she was described as, quote, quiet and gentle, end quote. After returning to Texas and shortly after her brother Jeb was born, she was diagnosed with late stages of leukemia. Despite trying their best to take her to doctors who tried experimental treatments, Robin died on October 11, 1953. The Bush Family Home joined the Texas Historical Commission in 2023 and is one of 38 sites within the state of Texas. Its operating hours are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday. The last tour begins at 4:15 p.m. Life Tributes. Dan Fender, 7/11/1939 to 8/7/2024. Daniel Paul Fender passed peacefully into the arms of his Savior on August 7, 2024. Dan was born on July 11, 1939, to Charles P. and Notra Fender in Walnut Ridge, Arkansas. Dan is survived by his 5 children and their spouses, Kevin and Krista Fender of Abilene, Texas, Byron and Carla Fender of Midland, Texas, Paula and Doug Reynolds of Ruidoso, New Mexico, Carrie and Lisa Fender of Azle, Texas, and Barry and Lisa Friend Fender of Midland, Texas. 15 grandchildren and their spouses, Callie, Ben, Jade, Cade, Helen, Caitlin, Chase, Abby, Jaden, Jake, Justin, Taylor, Luke, Claire, Davis, Sally, Casey, Shay, Hill, Dylan, Shelby, Faith, and Brandon, fiancé Sarah, and 6 great-grandchildren and 1 on the way. He is preceded in death by his wife of more than 60 years, Geneva Ann, brothers Charles, David, and Rodney, and parents Charles and Notra Fender. A private family memorial will take place at a later date. In lieu of a public memorial, the family asks that you do a random act of kindness for someone in honor of both Dan and Geneva and their lifelong commitment to helping others. In lieu of flowers, the family asks memorial gifts be made to support the New Mexico Christian Children's Home in Portales, New Mexico, 1356 NM 236 Portales NM 88130, or the Foster's Home for Children in Stephenville, Texas, 1779 North Graham Street, Stephenville, Texas, 76401, or the Dan and Geneva Fender Family Endowment at Tarleton State University, Box T-0415, Stephenville, Texas, 76401. Daniel Justin Christensen, 10/5/1977 to 8/12/2024. It is with heavy hearts that we announce the untimely passing of Daniel Justin Christensen, 46, at his home on Monday, August 12, 2024. Daniel was born on October 5, 1977, in Midland, Texas. Daniel is survived by his loving parents, Cheryl and Doug Christensen of Midland, Texas. He will also be missed by his lovely wife, Kelly Christensen of Midland, Texas, his brother, Will Christensen, and sister-in-law, Elizabeth, nephew, John, and nieces, Margot, Reese, and Mary Catherine of Midland, Texas, brother-in-law, Tom Dignan, Uncle Harry Nutter of Midland, Texas, aunt and uncle, Ellen and Dale Perry, aunt and uncle, Mary Ann and Robbie Christensen of Midland, Texas, as well as numerous cousins and friends, all of whom adored him deeply. He is preceded in death by his grandparents, Marcy and Max Christensen, and his grandparents, Dorothy and Clifford Nutter. A memorial service will be Monday, August 19th, 2024, at 10 o'clock a.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel in Midland, followed by a reception at The Branch at the same location. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that donations be made to First T. West Texas, P.O. Box 53035, Midland, Texas, 79710. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Phyllis Roosh, 10-4-1931 to 8-14-2024. Death is not extinguishing the light, it is only putting out the lamp because the dawn has come. The dawn came for Phyllis Roosh, 92, on 8-14-2024 at the cottages of Manor Park in Midland, Texas, where she finished her earthly journey and entered into eternity. Memorial service will be held Monday, August 19th, 2024 at 1 o'clock p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church, Midland, Texas. Graveside service will be conducted at 1 o'clock p.m. Tuesday, August 20th, 2024 at Llano Cemetery in Amarillo, Texas. Phyllis was born on October 4, 1931, to Elmo and Margaret Duke in the middle of the Great Depression and the devastating Dust Bowl. Phyllis was preceded in death by her husband, Don Roosh, her son, Duke Roosh, and her parents, Margaret and Elmo Duke. Phyllis is survived by her daughter, Donna Roosh, of Guthrie, Oklahoma, her daughter-in-law, Cheryl Roosh, of Midland, Texas, grandchildren, Ashley Roosh, of Midland, and Lindsay Roosh, Art, of Lubbock, Texas. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the Salvation Army. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Joe Grist, Sr., 3-30-1966 to 8-13-2024. Snyder. Joe Robert Grist, Sr. was born on March 30, 1966 in Amarillo, Texas. Joe passed away on August 13, 2024 in Snyder, Texas at the age of 58. A visitation for Joe will be held Friday, August 23, 2024 from 6 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. at Elliott Hamill Funeral Home, 5701 Highway 277 South, Abilene, Texas 79606. A celebration of life will occur Saturday, August 24, 2024 at 10 o'clock a.m., 5701 Highway 277 South, Abilene. Abilene, Texas, 79606. Interment will follow services at Abilene Municipal Cemetery, 1133 Cottonwood Street, Abilene, Texas, 79604, where he will be laid to rest with his mother and brother. Joe Robert Grist, Sr. was born on March 30, 1966 in Amarillo, Texas. Joe passed away on August 13, 2024 in Snyder, Texas at the age of 58. He was preceded in death by his beloved brother, John Mac Grist, his mother, Frances Sales, his grandparents, Jack and Marjorie Sales of Abilene, his grandparents, J. Walter Grist and Charlene Grist of Canadian, Texas, and his uncle, Bill Mac Grist of Lubbock. Joe is survived by his father, John E. Grist, his stepmother, Verna Grist, his three sons, Joe Robert Grist Jr., and fiancée Laura Alinas of Austin, Texas, Brandon Mac Grist, wife Brianda Grist, and grandchildren Noah and Emberly of Abilene, Texas, and Matthew Aaron Grist and fiancée Anley Longshore of San Angelo, Texas, and his uncle John Robert Sales of Nashville, Tennessee. Joe Robert Grist Sr. is loved and mourned by his family, friends, colleagues, and all who had the privilege of knowing him. To leave condolences or view online tribute, please visit www.elliot-hamil.com.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Permian Proud. Ector County ISD Superintendent Dr. Scott Murray to retire August 16, 2024 by Kathy Chateau. Ector County ISD ECISD is bidding farewell to Superintendent Dr. Scott Murray, who is retiring after serving in the role for 5 years and amid 36 years in public education. The District Boards of Trustees voted 6-0-1 to approve a voluntary retirement agreement with Dr. Murray at its meeting Tuesday, August 13. As part of the agreement, Dr. Murray will serve in advisory role as Superintendent Emeritus through January 31, 2025. He will support the district's transition to an interim superintendent and possibly its new full-time superintendent. Dr. Murray's other responsibilities will keep district initiatives and projects progressing while undergoing a seamless transfer to the new superintendent, according to the meeting minutes. Dr. Murray said during the meeting that he's not taking another superintendent job, but rather retiring. His immediate future plans including coaching and mentoring superintendents across the country. His time with the district, including improving state accountability ratings, leading it in the wake of an August 2019 mass shooting, seeing it through the COVID pandemic and a major teacher shortage, and helping spearhead a $424 million bond, according to the Odessa American. During the meeting, Trustee Delma Abalos thanked Dr. Murray for his service and for fulfilling his promise to stay at ECISD for at least 5 years. He received a standing ovation from the audience in the boardroom. The Board of Trustees voted 7-0 at Tuesday's meeting to name Dr. Keeley Boyer as interim superintendent. Since September 2021, Dr. Boyer has served as ECISD's chief of schools and oversees a team of three principal supervisors responsible for ECISD's principals. She came to the ECISD after serving as a general regional superintendent for 3 years at Portland Public Schools. Dr. Boyer holds a Doctor of Education in Educational Leadership and Policy from the University of Texas, according to the meeting minutes, and also completed the Cooperative Superintendency Program from the University of Texas, the Forum for Education Leadership, the University of Virginia's Partnership for Leadership in Education, and has been attending Holdsworth Center's Leadership Collaborative for 2 years. Dr. Murray posted a message on the ECISD's Facebook page that he has taken time to carefully reflect upon his journey and has decided it is time to close his chapter, this chapter, and begin anew. The past 5 years have truly been the most amazing of my career. I couldn't be more proud of Team ECISD. Thank you for embracing me as a member of this community and as your superintendent. I am forever grateful. Find this story for blind and low vision adults at 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org live stream. Justin Phillips hired as UTPB Falcons head baseball coach August 16, 2024 by staff report. Justin Phillips, currently an associate scout for the Kansas City Royals, who was a standout college pitcher, has been hired as the UT Permian Basin UTPB Falcons new head baseball coach. Phillips served as the head baseball coach at Trinity Christian School in Lubbock for 8 seasons from 2015 to 2022. Prior to serving in his current role with the Royals. From 2012 to 2014, he was assistant baseball coach and pitching coach at NCAA Division II Delta State University in Cleveland, Mississippi. At Harding University in 2007, Phillips became the first All-American selection for the Bison, earning Pitcher of the Year honors and leading the nation with 121 strikeouts, holding opponents to a batting average of .178. He went on to sign a free agent contract with the Royals and retired after playing more than 2 years of independent baseball. Scott Farmer, UTPB interim VP for athletics, touted Phillips' experience in college and in the professional ranks speaks. In addition, he has a wealth of experience coaching coaching in West Texas, and we believe that that will help set him up for great success here at UTPB, Farmer said. We welcome Justin and his family to the Falcon community with open arms and look forward to seeing his team take the field this spring. Phillips was on the Dean's List at Harding University, graduating in 2008 with a Bachelor's of Arts in Business Management. He earned a Master's of Business Administration with a focus on finance at Delta State University. In his third year there, he volunteered as pitching coach under the direction of Mike Kinnison. Phillips is a native of Waco and is married to the former Lindsay Price from Pampa, who is a licensed cosmetologist and makeup artist. The couple have four children, ages 5 to 15. Corey Hill named assistant coach for MC Women's Basketball, August 16, 2024, by staff report. Corey Hill was hired as the new assistant coach for the Midland College MC Women's Basketball team. Hill previously held coaching roles at Tocoi Creek High School, Western Nebraska Community College, and University Christian. He was credited with significant achievements in team performance and player development. His expertise in strategic game planning and skill enhancement will be invaluable to the Lady Chaps, according to MC. "We are thrilled to welcome Corey Hill to Midland College," said head women's basketball coach Ron Jones. "I think more than anything else, what Corey will bring to MC is incredible enthusiasm, strong drive, and a great work ethic." For more information, visit www.gochaps.com. Midland Odessa bus system sees 48% ridership spike, August 15, 2024, by staff report. Fixed route ridership on Easy Rider, the bus system serving both Midland and Odessa, increased by nearly 48% in July compared to the same month last year, according to the Midland Odessa Urban Transit District. A record-breaking 12,818 riders in July is 1,300 more than in May and over 4,000 above July 2023, the transit agency stated. The spike in ridership comes amid a flurry of productive news locally. For the first time this past June, the number of passengers boarding an airline in 1 month at Midland International Air and Spaceport surpassed 70,000. Last week, Midland also reported that is set to post one of the largest sales tax collections on record for the city. Also in June, the Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area posted the lowest unemployment rate in the state at 2.9%. Midland's unemployment rate was 2.6% that month, with Odessa's jobless rate not far behind at 4%, below the state average of 4.5% during the month. In addition, the size of the civilian labor force in June was 116,900, nearly 3,000 more than 1 year ago at 114,200 in June 2023, the city of Midland reported. Encore Entertainment unveils 2024-2025 Season of Favorites, August 14, 2024, by Kathy Chateau. Encore Entertainment is readying to unveil its 2024-2025 Season of Favorites, a concert series presenting four cultural arts concerts and three performances by the Southwest Symphony Orchestra at the RN Tidings Auditorium in Hobbs. Formerly known as the Southwest Symphony, Encore Entertainment said that each of the season's cultural arts concerts are returning favorites, as is the music being performed by the Southwest Symphony Orchestra. The season will launch September 9th at 3 p.m. with Artrageous, featuring a troupe from northern New Mexico with multi-talented performance artists, world-class singers and recording artists, highly trained dancers, veteran musicians, and an audience motivator together on one stage. Humor and audience interaction will complement what Encore Entertainment calls a frenzy of movement and color. The following month, the Southwest Symphony Orchestra will perform with Brass Transit in Color My World, October 10th at 7 p.m. in a show featuring multi-talented musicians paying tribute to the band Chicago's Songbook. November 18th at 7 p.m. will see the Dallas String Orchestra give a performance that will be half pops, half Christmas inspired, including a fusion of classic, traditional, and electric strings with the accompaniment of drums and guitar. The Southwest Symphony Orchestra's Youth Series concerts will usher in the new year with a performance on January 27th at 7 p.m. featuring more than 2,000 Lee County 3rd and 4th graders. The elementary school children will play favorites from Path Youth Series. The Bria Skongbird Quintet will give a special concert on February 14th at 7 p.m. featuring her trumpet style indebted to Louis Armstrong and singing voice inspired by Anita O'Day, according to Encore Entertainment. event. The season's last performance of the Southwest Symphony Orchestra will be a musician's choice Sunday, March 9th at 3 p.m. and will feature the performers playing their favorites from past concerts for the audience. Following the concert will be a reception for the musicians and audience members alike. Tycho Project will top off the season of favorites at the auditorium with a Japanese drumming performance led by Brian Yamami and Basato Baba. April 6th at 3 p.m., the RN Tidings Auditorium is located at 1332 East Scarborough Street in Hobbs, New Mexico. Tickets are $25 each or $100 for the season.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, August 17th. S&P Global lowers oil production outlook. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Non-organization of petroleum exporting countries producers appear to be taking their feet off the gas pedal. A new analysis from S&P Global Commodity Insights finds that the strong production growth by non-OPEC countries led by the United States appears to be slowing. The company's outlook expects non-OPEC plus countries to add 829,000 barrels per day of crude, including condensate. That is down 390,000 barrels from the previous forecast. For 2025, S&P Global expects production to grow by 1,117,000 barrels per day, down 570,000 barrels from the previous forecast. Jim Burkhard, Vice President and Head of Research for Oil Markets, Energy, and Mobility at S&P Global Commodity Insights, stressed that these figures are for all non-OPEC plus countries, not just the U.S. S&P Global also lowered its expectations for U.S. crude production growth in its analysis. The U.S. is still expected to produce more oil in 2025 than at any other time in history, but the degree by which it will exceed its previous record is substantially lower, Burkhard wrote. U.S. production is now expected to grow by 182,000 barrels per day for the remainder of 2024, down by 174,000 barrels from the previous forecast. For 2025, U.S. production is expected to grow by 429,000 barrels per day, down 311,000 barrels per day from the previous forecast. Lower expectations for U.S. output are the key driver for the downward revision, according to Burkhard. Quote, "The main reason is that drilling activity is simply lower than we had anticipated, and deceleration in productivity also plays a role," he told the Reporter-Telegram by email. He wrote that less upstream activity is a reflection of expectations for decelerating demand growth and lower prices. Burkhard attributed slowing global demand to Chinese oil demand. Quote, "China's oil demand boomed last year as the country reopened, but it only reopens once. So the impact of the reopening on demand is faded," he wrote. S&P Global's analysis also finds that lower supply growth will not necessarily mean higher oil prices. With more supply expected from OPEC Plus later this year, the global oil market is still on track to be oversupplied in 2025. And despite the cut to the U.S. outlook, S&P Global expects crude oil prices in 2025 to lower, on average, than in 2024. VTX uses modeling analysis to address water management. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Eric Hoover, president and chief operating officer of VTX Energy Partners, marked a career first with his presentation to attendees at the Produced Water Society Permian Basin Conference. Quote, "This is a first for me, attending a conference focused on water," he told his audience, as he offered the perspective of a small operator on dealing with water issues. VTX entered the lower 48 in 2021 with the acquisition of Hunt Oil's Midland Basin assets. In 2023, the company acquired the Delaware Basin Investment Group, or DBIG, gaining assets that produce 40,000 barrels of oil per day, 70,000 cubic feet of natural gas per day, and 290,000 barrels of water per day. The assets included 20 water source water wells, 22 saltwater disposal wells injecting 250,000 barrels of water per day, and 75 miles of water transfer pipeline. VTX has 328 producing wells, a 10-year inventory of 500 drilling locations using a two-rig program, uses 700,000 barrels of water per well, and uses 4,000 acre-feet of water per year of brackish water from the Rustler and Santa Rosa formations. Its own electric grid saves $6,500 per day and dramatically reduces its emissions footprint. A fuel gas line to supply fuel to frack and production fleets saves $200,000 per well. Quote, "The challenge is we need bigger pipe," Hoover said. The company operates 26 miles of 12-inch pipe, but needs to move up to 16 or 20-inch pipe, he said. The company has also observed rising pore pressure in its DBIG assets over time, including a 1-pound increase in just the last year. And because of movement and pore pressure increases, Hoover said zonal isolation can be difficult. Advancing cement technology has helped, and VTX designed a fast-setting cement to address the issue. VTX continues to study the issue using modeling and analysis to see how much water can be injected before problems arise. Quote, "These wells will be producing for 30 years, so we need to ensure wellbore integrity," he stated. But the company has realized it cannot keep injecting water. Quote, "Operators and water midstream companies are outgrowing legacy water infrastructure," he said. "The industry has gotten real good at reusing and recycling water, but the industry needs alternative solutions for handling produced water," end quote. He suggested expanding networks to other disposal areas and developing cost-effective technologies to take advantage of the large volumes of produced water. And, he said, the industry must continue to study the relationship between water injection and seismicity. Turning produced water into dollars faces hurdles. The story was written by Mellon McEwen, oil editor. Long seen as a waste, the water being produced alongside the Permian's crude and natural gas is now being seen as a potential asset. Turning those drops into dollars remains a challenge as researchers and the industry seek ways to add value through innovative reuse and mineral extraction. The subject was the focus of a panel discussion at the Produced Water Society's Permian Basin Conference this week. Quote, "Discussion has been focused on water as a waste. Operators spend a lot of money to bring it to the surface," said Matthew Sanderson, Executive Vice President and Chief Commercial Officer at Tetra Technologies. Continuing the quote, "It's not a waste. We need to understand what is in the water, understand what can be commercialized, and understand what can be used," he said. Madi Mamadi, Assistant Professor, Department of Chemical Engineering at Texas Tech University, agreed, telling the audience of the need to identify each constituent in the water and develop a supply chain to produce those minerals at scale. Quote, "From my point of view, we need to look beyond a sustained resource and look at any concentration of minerals and if we can reasonably source minerals and chemicals and build a sustainable supply chain at scale, Malmali said. Quote, we talked earlier about beneficial reuse and the need to keep produced water from being disposed of as long as possible, said John Durand, president and chief sustainability officer at XRI Holdings. Quote, we need to break down those elements and how they interact. Whether it's in the Permian Basin or other basins around the world, we need to create value for our customers as well as society, end quote. Jeff Braun, LEEDS's project manager at Bechtel, noted that his company has developed desalination technology being tested in Midland County and is seeking to maximize drops by recovering clean water, extracting constituents like lithium, hydrochloric acid, and other items. He said the industry needs to find ways to invest in the infrastructure to extract those constituents and move them to end users. Quote, we need an end-to-end solution, observed Sanderson. Durand commented that the water management industry needs to develop the ability to transport large quantities of treated produced water for use in areas not just by oil and gas companies, but by outside industries. His company is excited about the opportunities and is moving part of its business into transporting water to other industries to diversify its core business. Quote, it's up to all of us in this room to keep the sector growing in the right direction, not just in mineral extraction and other areas, but into areas we don't know about yet, Durand said. PWS speaker warns Permian approaching injection limits. The story was written by Mela McEwen, oil editor. Rising water volumes and pore pressures are driving the Permian Basin industry to seek out-of-basin water disposal and beneficial reuse. Quote, we know we need both, said Robert Crane, Executive Vice President, Texas Pacific Water Resources. Addressing the second and final day of the Produced Water Society's Permian Basin Conference, Crane told his audience he was focusing on the Delaware Basin, where his company operates. In the Delaware, he said high water cuts are pervasive, and the company has seen a 20% increase in information pressure since 2017, and high-intensity spatial zones are seeing even greater pressure increases. Quote, Texas pore space could reach injection limits by 2030, he cautioned. Demand for disposal could exceed current operational injection capacity around 2030, end quote. That is why developing out-of-basin disposal and beneficial reuse outside the industry are becoming increasingly critical in order to facilitate continued upstream development, Crane said. But out-of-basin infrastructure, such as an 80-mile pipeline to carry water from Reeves County to Andrews County for disposal, requires substantial capital and resources and break-even gathering fees of $1 per barrel of water or more will increase disposal costs for operators. Rising disposal costs will serve to make beneficial reuse a more attractive alternative, one that is more difficult but also more sustainable. The challenges to getting there include initial capital and operational expenditures, liability and regulatory concerns, the need for operators and water treatment companies to each receive competitive prices, and developing a royalty system for landowners. Crane's company has a pilot project in a lab in South Midland County growing alfalfa in soils from three counties and using produced water with various amounts of total dissolved solids removed. The company is working with the Railroad Commission for permits for a field-scale version of the project in Reeves County. The company is also working with the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality for permits to discharge some of the treated water in the Pecos River. Quote, TPWR believes aquifer recharge is the safest and most viable option for beneficial reuse, Crane said. Water industry seen following same shifts as operators. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Produced water is uncovered everywhere, and more comes every day. Growth in the volume of produced water has slowed, but is still one of the biggest challenges the energy industry faces, said John Schmitz, chief executive officer and chairman of Select Water Solutions. And the issue is not solely with the Permian, but lies across all basins, he told the attendees at the Produced Water Society Permian Conference. His company's customers are focused on recycling and reuse solutions, but even if 100% recycled water is used in fracturing operations, Schmitz said there remains 5 billion barrels of produced water to manage. Schmitz told his audience the water market is shifting just as the exploration and production market has shifted. Public E&P companies are feeling the pressure to maintain inventories and are chasing the benefits of larger scale. He added post-merger companies tend to lower activity and the competition for investor attention is fierce. Likewise, the water market is shifting to commercialized midstream and further consolidation among water handling companies is expected. Quote, these moves come as water operators get stuck, feel the pressure to grow, and seek the benefits of scaled networks, he said. Systems, networks, and regional scope will give options to operators and water companies to use water outside the oil fields, he said. Mineral extraction will be a source of profit and stable cash flow as prices rise and the technology is proven, though that could take up to a decade, Schmitz said. Beneficial reuse of produced water outside the industry, on the other hand, will be technically, commercially, and regulatory viable in the next 1 to 2 years and will scale, he said. Select is targeting partial desalination of treated water, and the secret sauce is in pre-treatment, technical assembly, and operations. The company is pursuing scaled pilots beyond lab scale, he said. Quote, water can fuel the energy transition, but we have to attract projects, he stated. A lot of new technology and advanced energy, hydrogen, green methane, natural gas power generation, and carbon recapture, utilization, and storage are trying to find their way to market, but the industry must work to be part of those efforts, he said. In the Permian Basin alone, he said forecasts have the region seeing an 8% shortfall in water by 2030. Currently, an average of 13.7 million barrels a day of produced water is disposed of in the Permian. Quote, we're 13.7 million barrels a day long in a region that needs water, he said. Put it all together and we can provide the 8% that's lacking. The industry can provide the solution, end quote.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.